Welcome back to the Drake Basketball Podcast, coming to you on the heels of Drake's thrilling 93-41 victory over the Panthers of York College. Eduardo, I know you were on the ground last night. Unfortunately, I couldn't be there. What was it like in the Knapp Center?
Drake Basketball is back in the Knapp. If you're asking me how was it to be back in the Knapp Center, for me it was great, as I always enjoy being back in the Knapp. If I'm being honest, the atmosphere was extremely lackluster. if I can be honest, I don't know how much excitement we were expecting for, you know, York on a Monday night to kick off the season. Maybe that had a little something to do with it. But the first time seeing our new look team, at least.
Well, if it makes you feel better, I mean, I saw you on TV within probably like the first 10 minutes of screen time. I saw you and your son sitting there in the stands, and you certainly looked like you were doing your part to carry the crowd forward with momentum, cheering on the Bulldogs. So,
yes, I was definitely had a lot of energy, clearly, and fully engaged and jumping up and down. That's how I usually am during games, right? But no, it was a very weird ambiance in the Knapp Center. I mean, if I could summarize it, I would say that it felt very. The crowd that was there was kind of like, who are these strangers? Because they are strangers. It's the first time that we've seen this new group of Bulldogs assembled. So I think there was definitely some hesitancy with, you know, what to expect, you know, what are we seeing? But even as Drake was playing well, obviously, I mean, they were, we'll get into it, but it didn't seem like there was a lot of pop. Or a lot of energy in the building generally. What did you see? What were some of your takeaways of our first exam of the season?
Sure. So really I had three. The number one takeaway I had was that the Ben McCollum offense looked great. The movement throughout the game, I think, looked better than DeVries' offense did consistently throughout his tenure here. Obviously, I mean, you can't come out and make a judgment over who's going to be the better coach as a result of one game. DeVries is, you know, arguably the most successful coach in Drake basketball history outside of Maury John, and did great things for Drake basketball. But McCollum's offense looked awesome. Like, the movement was great away from the ball. There were a lot of screens being set, cuts, and I think everyone looked very disciplined. They knew what they were doing. Bennett Sturts is the real deal. He was knocking down shots from deep. He almost put down a hell of a poster on one guy. You know, I mean, I shouted in my living room, and I think, you know, my neighbors thought something was wrong because I screamed, but it was just because Bennett Sturts almost killed a guy.
Yeah, heck of a block, honestly, because that was almost going to be a great poster. But I'm with you. I'm ready to make a declaration on who's a better coach just based off of playing York. No, I'm joking. But Bennett looked awesome. He looked super comfortable. And the offense looked free-flowing. And I would say that, yes, you can't make, you know, is this going to look the same if you're playing Bradley or UNI? Well, no, obviously, you know, those are much better teams. But I think what you want to see as a fan is, are we executing? Is the ball moving? And I thought our offense, everything was quick, decisive, very intentional. The slip screens, the back cuts, and just the movement, you know, it seemed like every shot we were taking was wide open. And it doesn't matter if you're playing a good or bad opponent, if you're getting those quality looks each time, that's a great sign. And it is different from the DeVries era, because obviously pretty much everything we ran last year was through Tucker or Brody. So it was generally operating off of the high post, operating off the elbow, and it was just always centered around the gravity that Tucker brought to the court and Darnell's passing. And that's really how we created looks. You know, what we saw on Monday night was a offense that's moving, a lot of screens, a lot of back cuts, and Drake looked good on offense.
Yeah, definitely with DeVries, it was much more reliant upon player skill and ISO ball. You know, I mean, DeVries certainly had sets, but, you know, he wasn't scared to let Tuck use his NBA skill set to take advantage of the other team's defense and score, or, you know, set up Atten and take someone to the hoop or try to post up with Darnell. Whereas certainly one game into it against York College from Nebraska, Ben McCollum had the offense creating shots for the team. And yeah, the offense was moving like a well-oiled machine. It looked like the Golden State Warriors out there. In terms of the Golden State Warriors, I know in a past podcast, we had compared him to a potential Draymond Green type player on this team, but Daniel Abreu is a much better shooter than I was anticipating him to be. He was not shooting like he had a backpack on, like Draymond Green does. He was knocking them down from deep, and his stroke looks good.
Yeah, he was obviously really impressive. You know, Bennett, we mentioned him, 18 points, 7 assists, 0 turnovers. Abreu, he's definitely has like a, I would say, kind of a linebacker build, seeing him in person. Like, he's very stocky. And I think what that creates is just a lot of mismatch opportunities. And the fact that he looks so comfortable shooting the ball in the corner is something that we've always joked about, that Drake has always wanted to have and never seems to get, just a big that can stretch it. And he's not obviously like a 7-footer, but just having like a forward that is so comfortable to, yep, I'll camp out in the corner and knock down Trace. He looked awesome. 30 points on 10 of 16, no turnovers. And really it was the way that he was doing it, because it was threes, it was just little moves inside, just attacking the basket. He just looked like someone who has a very diverse offensive skill set, which, again, when he was at Northwest Missouri State, he had a great run in their tournament, run to the championship game, but I believe he averaged like 11 points a game. So, you know, not someone who had ever scored 30 points at the collegiate level. So that was impressive to see.
Well, what's nice with Abreu is you have the option to either play him as a four, you know, with Maniao, or you can play him in a small ball lineup as, you know, a five out, like they do, you know, with Draymond on the Warriors. So McCollum has a lot of options with this team.
One thing that jumped out to me, kind of getting to see the team in person, is how our size advantage has been shifted. So in the previous era, it was Tucker and Brody, right? You know, tall four, tall five, and that was kind of where our size was. And we were really small in the guard and wing positions. Now it's shifted. Now our guards and our wings have a lot of size and length, and our bigs are a little bit shorter, but still have length, you know, obviously with Maniao. And again, it's not that they're short. It's just, it looks different. Now our wings look long, and that's not something that we had in the past. And I mean, it's probably easier to dissect the offense than it is to dissect the defense in a game like Monday night's, you know, winning 93-41. I don't know how good our defense was or wasn't, if I'm being honest, but at the very least, you can say they were playing hard, they were rebounding the ball, they were causing turnovers, pushing the tempo. So I don't know if you had any takeaways of how we looked on defense. I like Maniao just right off the bat. Looked like York had an easy layup and comes out of nowhere and swats it. You know, that's something that not even Brody really had to his game, of just that athleticism to just kind of not come up with a block off the weak side.
Yeah, Brody didn't really have a vertical element to his game. Like blocks were never really something that he could contribute much of. So that's going to be nice in terms of rim protection to see for Maniao. The thing that he's going to give up is the more, horizontal element in terms of holding his ground, because he doesn't have the size that Brody did.
No.
And I mean, you could even see it with some of the bigger York guys who could move him off his spot a little bit more. I mean, the Valley isn't really a haven for big men, but you're going to have some guys who are bigger than there are on York College. And he's going to really have to work on holding his ground once he sees some bigger guys in league play. And especially in non-conference play too. Like, I mean, when we're matched up against Miami, when we're matched up against Kansas State, it'll be interesting to see if we maybe throw some double teams down on post-entry passes on defense rather than just leaving him on an island to defend against post-ups.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the size, like you said, just the size, the girth of some bigs can definitely affect Man Yao. But I also thought it was just nice to see the starting lineup in the rotation. I mean, I think we kind of had an idea of how it's going to shake out, but just having just seeing what McCollum envisioned and kind of seeing the first test, I think it flowed really well. Having Abreu, Sturts, Cam, Mitch Mascari, and Isaiah Jackson, which shout out to Mitch Mascari. I had no idea he was such a gunner, and I'm here for it because his stroke looks really good, even though he was just 2 of 8 on Monday night. Like, he looks so comfortable, and he does a really good job of just moving without the ball. So I just know he's gonna have a good year shooting the ball for Drake. And Isaiah Jackson, 22 played 22 minutes, didn't even attempt a shot, but I like his game a lot. He's just always probing, always dribbling into the teeth of the defense and just setting other guys up and having a lot of different hockey assists too. So I thought starting lineup flowed. I also want to shout out Nate Ferguson. I honestly, probably the loudest ovation of the entire night was when he first checked into the game. Which was cool to see, because obviously him and Andrew Lee are the only two people that remain from last year's team, and Nate really the only contributor from last year's team that remained. So when he checked in, he got a nice ovation, and right on cue, there was a breakaway, a steal, and a breakaway dunk for Nate. So he was good too, and I'm glad that he is very much seems like will be first big off the bench. He had a nice night with 11 points and 5 rebounds. Anything else jump out at you?
Well, yeah, like you said, Andrew Aaliyah, 3 for 7 from the floor, almost had double figures with 8 points. So, I was celebrating for you at home in my living room when he was making it rain out there. But outside of Nate and Andrew putting up big numbers, big story on the night, Tavian Banks was injured, and I think he's going to be a key player for Drake this year in terms of his athleticism and his size inside. Drake is a team that needs as much size and athleticism as it can get, especially on the interior. So we're going to need Tavian back healthy as soon as we can get him. I don't know what sort of injury he's dealing with right now. I heard that it's 50-50 that he's back for Stephen F. Austin on Sunday. So, hopefully we see him in uniform this weekend.
Yeah, he'd be big, and like you said, we just need a little bit more size on the interior. And by the way, nothing that Andrew Aaliyah does surprises me. So I just expect these clutch performances out of my guy. But no, it was a pretty good night for Drake. Kind of what you want to see. Can I hit you with a couple random thoughts on the game? Well, one, I want to start out with a very weird moment to start the game, and I don't know how you can do it any differently, but I described, definitely had a weird vibe to the nap of just, again, brand new team, brand new roster, and they did a little, hey, we're unveiling the new banner for our conference tournament championship, and it was just honestly silence and some scattered applauses, because ultimately it just brings you back to everything that left the building in the last 6 months. I don't know how you avoid it. How do you unveil that and do it in a non-awkward way? But it was awkward. And it probably everyone was thinking the same thing of like, oh yeah, that's the team that won the conference tournament championship and everyone left, the coach, the players. So let's all remember that. But it is, it is a cool achievement for Drake. So I don't know. I think we could have been okay without doing a formal shedding a light on the banner and everyone look over here to look at it. So that was odd. Also, I did not know that coach, or maybe I didn't pay attention, that Coach McCollum is team dress shirt and tie. How are we feeling about that? Because I have thoughts, and I'm definitely pro. How do you stand?
I'm definitely anti.
So here's my thing. It's not that I mind or that I want a coach to be formal or not. I just have more of an issue that apparently, like, 4 years ago, the entire college community decided we're all just wearing pullovers and khakis to games, and that's it. So I'm more of a proponent for diversity and of thought and how you dress. So I'm saying, if someone wants to wear a suit, wait, great.
Wait. So you're officially positioning me as an opponent of diversity if I'm anti-tie?
You really have to work on your DEI when it comes to fashion. But I swear, like, every team out in America, the coach and his entire staff is wearing like a pullover and khakis, or a pullover and black pants or whatever. And I just think it's weird. Like, what was there an official memo that went out to the entire NCAA? I'm good with, mix it up. If you want to wear a dress shirt and tie, I love it. So I'm okay with it. Although it does look kind of funny that he's the only one wearing that, and his entire staff is wearing the same pullover and pants look.
It looks odd that all the assistants are rocking the quarter zips and he's then just wearing the middle school dance tie and shirt. But that's my main thing, is I feel like you got to go with the suit jacket and tie and shirt, or none at all,
So you want,
I understand. I'm a fan of the classic look with the suit jacket and tie. Like, if you want to go with that, for sure. Like, that's the look I grew up with. I remember Tom Davis roaming the sidelines in his suit jacket. And obviously you had like Kurt Konaski doing it too, but we don't need to bring him up. but yeah, I think you got to at least start the game with the suit jacket on. And then if it gets heated and you need to take it off and, chuck it into the bench because of a terrible call to make a point, then do it. But I think you need to start the game with the suit jacket on.
So you want the Porter Moser jacket is being thrown at some point. You want the Porter's jacket to come off, which was the inspiration to the name of that Twitter handle, because at any point, Porter Moser was going to get angry and throw his jacket. So we want to rekindle that for Coach McCollum.
I mean, if it worked for Loyola, I would take a Final Four appearance.
It's not surprising that McCollum is a traditionalist when it comes to this, because he seems to be very like by the book and old school at times. So it's not surprising that he's like, no, a coach is supposed to be wearing, a shirt and tie.
No, everything I've heard about McCollum is that he's a very detail-oriented guy, a traditionalist, and it very much seems to fit with his persona. So it doesn't surprise me. I'm slightly surprised he hasn't taken it a step further and worn, the full suit and jacket.
Yeah. Yeah, that's all I had as far as random tidbits of the game. Drake rolls on. We got our first win, and we got another one coming up at the NAP later this week.
Before we jump on to Stephen F. Austin, can I just say, What a pathetic opening night for the Valley.
I thought we were saving that till the end, because if you know, spoiler alert, I'm feeling very confident in Drake winning the Valley after seeing what was on display last night, as far as, yep, we can definitely compete. The Valley did not look good on Monday night.
God.
Valpo getting beat pretty bad by Liberty. UT Martin coming into Illinois State and winning a bye game. Bradley, even though they won 20 plus, you know, their stars did not play well. You know, Duke Dean had 2 points with 8 minutes left in the game. And then, I mean, was there any good? I guess Missouri State looked good. You know, they lost by, what was that, three to Butler.
Yeah, Belmont was down at half to Maryville College, Tennessee. I mean, they pulled away in the second half, but still, that's gross. FAU beat Indiana State by 33.
Yep. Rough night to be a Valley fan.
Just, yeah. Pathetic across the board. Really, it was just either you were beating, you know, NAIA or D3 school, or you were losing to a bad D1 program.
Right. And we talked about Illinois State, as I mentioned them as, you know, they're on paper, they should be pretty good. But I don't know. There seems to always be missing with that program. And they definitely did not do anything to dispel that on their first game. And well, I think they were 7 of 40 from three, if I remember the box score correctly. So just a weird night for the Valley. But yeah, I mean, we said it in our last episode that we feel like Drake can compete for the Valley, and there's a lot of change and a lot of turnover, and the Valley's down. So even though, you know, if Drake's roster takes a step back, you know, the Valley has taken a step back, and I think we can be right there, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's just going to be a matter of getting adjusted to, you know, the level of play. Obviously, this first game out, you're playing an NAIA school that lost to Omaha, Nebraska by 50 as well. So that's not the best barometer of competition. But I think we've got the coach in place, and we've got a squad who, once they get acclimated to the level of competition, has the ability to do it. So excited to see what they're capable of.
Yeah, and I'll add to that, like, I keep seeing, like, NBC Hoops and some of these different, you know, Valley accounts, like, let's go get some non-con wins and, you know, let's have a two-bid league. There's no chance. Like, I'm telling all Valley fans, like, there is no chance for a two-bid league for the Valley this year. I mean, I'm calling it already. Like, you would have to have like a out of this world non-con run by like Bradley or something. And chance? I don't even think that's possible.
Well, you and I beat Wisconsin in their super secret scrimmage. So hypothetically, the chance would be if you and I was good this year, secretly good, you know. Let's say they got back to their UNI roots where they played slow ball UNI, played out of their heads, overachieved in the non-con. And, you know, Drake is an enigma. Nobody knows what the hell Drake is going to be. Like, it's possible. Like, we may have the best coach in the world. Like, at this point, we don't know.
We can't rule it out quite like, yet.
We've got a guy who's... We've got a guy who's won national championship after national championship after national championship. And this is his first go around at D1. So for all we know, he's the best Division I basketball coach who's ever coached the sport. So who knows?
Time will tell. Time will tell.
So the path to two bids is you and I has one of their good years, and Drake is a sleeping giant under McCollum. Bradley, I'm not seeing it. I think they're in for a letdown, as we've discussed earlier. but that could just be the hater in me.
We could be hating on Bradley. No, I mean, yeah, in theory, you could have a team pretty much go practically undefeated and then lose in the title and then maybe they get in. That's kind of the path. But I'm not seeing that happening for any particular team in the Valley. I mean, you had Indiana State last year had a great run. And they didn't even get in, even though they had really good metrics and all that. So when you stack it up that way, I'm like, I don't know. I don't see it, but no. Prove me wrong, Valley, prove me wrong. Let's have a good non-con, but I'm just preparing for a one bid league and you got to win the MVC title to get in. And that's all that matters.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's jump over to our first real opponent of the season, the Stephen F. Austin Lumberjacks. Drake played Stephen F. Austin last year when they matched up against the Lumberjacks in the Cayman Islands Classic. The Lumberjacks ran the Bulldogs out of the frickin' gym, 92-68. They shot 61% from three and 63% from the field while holding Drake to just 39% shooting. 15 players saw the floor for Stephen F. Austin and 12 of them scored, and it was a beatdown in every sense of the word. This year, the Lumberjacks are picked second in the Southland Conference behind Will Wade's McNeese State team, so they're supposed to be pretty good again this year. They've only played one game so far against the University of Dallas, which they won by 34, 85 to 51. They're supposed to be led by preseason All-Southland guard Keon Thompson, who transferred in from UMass, but he's suffering from some sort of an injury, so he hasn't played quite yet. So their starting five to start out the year are as follows. 6'9", 235-pound senior Chris Southwick. 6'9", 235-pound senior Nana Antui-Boisiaku. 6'5", 210-pound junior Krishan Christmas. 6'7", 200-pound freshman Dominic Pangonis. And 6'5", 200-pound senior Matt Heyman. In their opener, they shot 4-for-22 from behind the arc. So they don't appear to be a great three-point shooting team. But again, they shot double their season average from behind three-point line against us last year. So maybe they just really, shoot well against blue and white.
Yeah, so we really need Nate Ferguson to be really angry about the outcome from last year and really galvanize the team to get some revenge for the 24-point loss at the Cayman Classic.
But I mean, this is going to be the determining factor between who the better coach is, between Darren DeVries and Ben McCollum.
That's true. Can I share one stat that I found when I was looking at Stephen F. Austin that I was just kind of blown away by? Over the past two decades, the Lumberjacks have the best winning percentage among D1 programs in the state of Texas. How about that? How do you like that? Take that, UT Austin, Texas A&M, University of Houston, Stephen F. Austin. How about that?
Not too shabby.
Yeah, I mean they've been a really good mid-major over the past decade, it feels like, and that's why we were excited to match up against them again. In the Cayman Classics and then got a huge letdown. Probably Drake's, that was probably Drake's worst game of the season last year. And it seems like they have a style, right? Like they always have a lot of athletes, a lot of guys that can kind of jump out the building. I think traditionally they're a good three-point shooting team, even if last year they didn't have the best stats when they played Drake. But traditionally, they shoot a lot of threes, they have athletes, and they'll score a lot of points.
Yeah. I mean, definitely from a height and athleticism standpoint, they're going to be a huge, huge upgrade from what we faced against York. Rebounding and defensively, like, the challenge is going to be immeasurably tougher than what we saw against the Panthers. I think defensively they're going to apply a lot more pressure, and that's something that all of our ball handlers especially are going to have to be ready for. Like, Drake cannot afford to turn the ball over against that kind of pressure, because that's going to lead to easy run out points, And that's not something that we can afford to give up.
You mentioned it, Tucker. You know, we've heard a lot over the past 4 or 5 months of, is this roster built to play in the Valley? Is it built to play in D1? And I think when we match up against Stephen F. Austin, I think we'll get to see what we look like against a team that's going to have a lot of athletes, a lot of size. So that'll be a good barometer from that perspective. And I think we'll be just fine. I think for Drake, this will be a good test to really play their first really competitive game of the season and to see how does our offense look against a team like Stephen F. Austin that they can really rush you, right? They can kind of get you playing a little bit out of sorts and playing faster than you want to. So we'll just have to be disciplined and run our sets and not get carried away, which was ultimately, I think, what kind of did us in our matchup last year, where all of a sudden we're just jacking threes and running up and down the court, trying to match their tempo and not really playing our game. So it'll be a good one.
Yeah. If I'm Daniel Abreu, if I'm Mitch Mascari, if I'm Bennett Sturts, if I'm Isaiah Jackson, I see this as an opportunity to make a statement. You know, you've got to be sick to death about hearing random people on Twitter talking about, you know, the difference between D2 players and D1 players. And I think there's no better time than Sunday to really match up against what has been one of the premier programs in mid-major basketball over the past decade and just show exactly how capable of a Division I basketball player you are.
No notes added. We have a couple of like kind of just cool programs coming into the NAP in a week span. I mean, because after Stephen F. Austin, then you have Florida Gulf Coast. Like, shout out to Lob City. Like, that's in a week span, that's pretty cool to see two programs that have made noise in the in March Madness before coming to Des Moines. That's pretty neat.
Yeah, those are both really fun, Cinderella matchups.
Yeah, for sure. You got any other notes about Stephen F. Austin or the Valley? Any other teams you want to make fun of before we wrap it up?
Not make fun of. I want to give a condolences to Marty Richter on his first game for UC Upstate. They got throttled by NC State in their first game of the season. I saw.
That's not good.
Yeah.
Are we going to be doing any kind of West Virginia watch throughout the season, or are we just going to pretend like they don't exist and just assume that Tucker is scoring 20 points and West Virginia is dominating?
Nah. I feel no need to keep up with West Virginia. Like, I mean, I think they can enjoy their country roads and squirrel stew, whatever it is that they do down there on their own.
I will give you the update on one of our favorites. I will still maintain a Joe Yesufu watch. 14 minutes, 3 points. There you go.
13 minutes and 3 points?
14 minutes. Don't sell him short, please.
Damn, that dude should never have left Drake. His career has just spiraled ever since.
Hey, but Breeze will always have a soft spot for him.
I can't remember. I was just about to say something. I know what I was going to say. It's funny on Instagram. I don't remember if I sent it to you or not, but like every other day I get this meme that pops up and it's just a replay of Yesufu posterizing Jackson from Wichita State.
Oh yeah.
And it's that dunk in slow motion and it's talking about them kissing because they accidentally kiss in midair.
Yeah.
That was, shows how surprised they looked.
I feel like that shows up in my feed like every 3 months of the famous Joe Yesufu dunk that people don't realize he literally kisses the Wichita State player midair. It's a very weird play when you see the slow-mo of it.
It's the only time I've seen that on a basketball court.
Only time, for sure.
Joe really should have embraced it more. You know?
Oh, man.
Like, winked at least.
Yeah. That's so weird. I don't know how that happened, but hey, Drake won that game. That was great. That was the pinnacle of Joe Yesufu's powers, so.
Pinnacle of Joe Yesufu's powers, pinnacle of the DeVries era at Drake University.
There you go. Anything else you got?
No, just that I'm encouraged by game one, and I'm excited to see where we go against Stephen F. Austin this weekend.
Let's get it. Go Dawgs.
All right, go Dawgs.